This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy94.9. Support Joy94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And a very happy Saturday here on Joy 94.9. I'm Jodie, and this is The Detours Show. I'm joined by Lindsay and Greg. How are you guys?
Fabulous, thanks, Jodie. A little bit chilly this morning, and after yesterday's horrible day, where I think most of us just stayed inside by the fire with a good book, or at least somebody who read one.
And it went colder and colder and colder, and then around about 4 a.m. it actually got warmer.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
So, look, Melbourne's the place to be if you're into skiing and into...
Well, there wasn't any snow, but there's heaps of water yesterday. I think it was the wettest May in 17 years.
Yeah.
Unreal.
It's fantastic. We've even got someone that's not suffering Melbourne's winter. He's escaped, and David McCarthy, Macca, ex-Detours host with SatMag, is in Paris, and he messaged at about 3:30 in the morning from Charles de Gaulle 2, and he said it's... what did he say? There was dogs in the terminal. The internet was the slowest Wi-Fi he's experienced anywhere in the world. Bah! He wanted to be anywhere else but there. So maybe he'll come back to Melbourne's weather.
Well, of course, this is the travel show, and we love to hear from you all the time about your travel ideas, your tips, your hints, your disasters. Of course, Lindsay in particular likes to hear the horror stories.
Oh, I love the horror stories.
Yeah. And you can SMS us on 04... I've just suddenly lost the
0427
Joy 949.
If you're international, that's +61 427 569 949, or on air at joy.org.au.
That's absolutely right. Now, of course, tonight in Melbourne, Australia, will be the screening of the Eurovision Song Contest. Mm. This must be the only show on Joy that isn't playing Eurovision songs. So it's certainly worth a watch and hours of entertainment. But we'll have lots of other great music that, in particular, our special guest who's joining us here today has brought in. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you very much.
And now, Mark, you're a friend of Joy for the last 3 years or so on the
Orange Ribbon. Yes, it's been 3 or 4 years, Orange Ribbon, yeah.
Orange-driven. So what's that program about?
It's our multicultural chat show. So we bring in guests from various backgrounds from around the world and talk to them about their growing up with GLBTI issues and covering some music from around the world, some sort of international music as well.
Yeah, very
excellent.
Good.
Now, your passion for international, I mean, you don't have a Footscray accent. Clearly, there's an international man in the Detour studio now.
I thought it was slightly Seddon.
Actually, Altona North.
That's it.
That's where I am now.
So, as a man that was born clearly overseas,
yep.
Which country?
So, I'm originally from Wales, from Cardiff.
So for you, you've had your own detour to take you out of Wales, out of the United Kingdom, and bring you to the point where you're here in Australia.
It's been a long journey to get here. But I lived in Wales for most of my life, and then moved to London for work, then moved from London to New York for work, and then moved from New York to Melbourne. So that's been a bit of a journey in itself, sort of thing, just to get here. And I've been in Australia now for nearly 5 years.
And we have to ask, can you pronounce the longest, what is it, train station in the world that's in Wales?
That's
the one.
Now, I want you on my team for the trivia night. Do you know how to spell it?
I do, yeah.
Oh, you're so clever.
It's the only thing we're taught in Wales. We don't know anything else. We're just taught how to say that, and we just make it up each time. It's different. Nobody knows.
So in Wales, is language dying out?
It's actually growing again. Unfortunately, I can't speak Welsh. I mean, I can say a few bits and pieces, but I probably know more French than I do Welsh. But when I was growing up in the 70s, it was classed as a dying language and why bother teaching it sort of thing. But in the 80s and 90s, there was quite a revival of trying to keep hold of that culture. We have a very strong Welsh culture still, but it was very much in the English language in my era. But, for example, my nephews and nieces go to Welsh kindergarten, so they learn Welsh in kindergarten, so it is starting to grow again. And I think that's part of the whole European thing about trying to keep some of this unique culture, and Welsh is one of the oldest spoken languages sort of thing that's been going around for years, so or hundreds of years. So.
And Wales is a beautiful place. I mean,
when the sun's out.
When it's not. I mean, the time that I visited there was in autumn. Uh-huh. It was Halloween.
Yeah.
And I was in Hay-on-Wye, which is a beautiful little town that is renowned for bookshops. Mm-hmm. And I decided to... with the time difference, get up in the middle of the night and trek on down to the little telephone box to ring with a calling card back to Joy to do an interview on Detours. But I got really freaked out by a whole bunch of people who came out of a pub and I got scared. So I went back to the hotel.
Yeah. but they would have been really friendly.
They probably would have, but I was on my own in a little town and it was dark. Yeah. But the town itself is gorgeous and lots of beautiful bookshops, and in fact it's renowned all around the world for that.
Yeah, I think they have a big literary festival there as well, yeah. And there's lots of small little villages like that throughout Wales and throughout the UK, really. I'm from the biggest city in Wales, but it's still only a population of 300,000. So Cardiff isn't really that big in itself. Yeah.
Now, the huge amount of migrants came out of Wales and into Australia in the late 1800s, early 1900s, mm-hmm. and they were farmers, they were miners,
yep.
ran the coal mines, and a lot of mines closed down into the 1900s,
yep.
and people actually came here, and it's formed a big chunk of the UK migrants that my grandparents are some. Have you met many people that are, you know, say, oh, my parents or my grandparents were Welsh?
Not that many. It happens occasionally, but it's not... I think there aren't as many sort of Welsh as there are Scottish and Irish, for example, but there are out there. I mean, there's a Welsh church in the city, and you see in the place names like Carnarvon and Swansea and places like that. So you see it on the map more than... So I think it's more of a, like I said, from the early 1900s as opposed to current. I think most people in Wales are... Now, I don't know where they are now.
Today we're going to explore how you've returned home,
uh-huh.
and the journeys you took along the way.
Yep.
We're going to ask you some interesting questions. If you've got questions, once again, 0427JOY949, on air at joy.org.au. And we're going to unpack Mark Ristock in a very interesting way.
I'm not scared.
We'll be gentle.
You want diversity? Check out Weekends on Joy.
Become a Joy member so we can give you the best shows every day.
The world's most uplifting station.
Call 1300JOY949.
Joy94.9.
But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along.
I will survive, I will survive.
Joy 94.9.
And this is Detours here on Joy 94.9. I'm Jodie, joined by Greg and Lindsay. And that fantastic track was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, from the musical, the original Broadway cast recording, and that was I Will Survive.
Now, Mark Ristock, that musical track uh-huh. has a significance for you.
Yep.
Because it connects you about your journeys, why you ended up on the way almost to Wales, your home.
Yep,
city.
Exactly, yeah. So I went, I was going back to New York for work a couple of weeks ago. So while I was there, I thought, well, it's a good opportunity while I'm in the Northern Hemisphere to tag on a week's vacation and went back home. But while I was in New York for work, I couldn't resist popping into Broadway and went and saw a show and went to see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert while I was there. And I've seen it a few times here, of course, but always good to see it again in Broadway. And that's the Broadway cast recording of it. So.
That's a bit of a rite of passage, isn't it, to be a gay man to travel to New York and see Priscilla on Broadway?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I have to admit that I never, ever, ever, like West Side Story, any of those shows, if I've seen the movie and I love the movie, yeah. I will never, ever go to the live performance. Yeah. Never, ever, ever. And a friend of mine just about was dragging me by the hair one night to see Priscilla. I said, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. No, it'll destroy it for me. But when, you know, you just sort of drop that line in there. You know, I thought I'd just drop into Broadway and see Priscilla's. When you're in New York, I can imagine that you know, there's Priscilla down one end of the street and Annie up the other, and the vibe must be incredible.
It is, and I lived in New York for I lived in New Jersey for a couple of years before I moved here. So having Broadway on the doorstep pretty much was amazing. So got to see lots of Broadway shows, and And what's amazing there is that you can just sort of turn up and go, oh, what shall I go and see today? And that's pretty much what I did on that day. Just booked the tickets and you can go and see an amazing show, and there's just so many to choose from. It's awesome.
Excellent.
And Mark, is it like the West End where you can go to the Broadway theatres and buy the cheapest tickets, but you're behind a pole or something and you can't see? And you can just hear the music?
No, I was third row from the front.
Wow.
Like, so, and for some, I think it's because there's so much competition, they just never sell out. So they just want to fill, put bums on seats pretty much. And even you go on some websites and you can, if you Google it, you'll get a discount. So I didn't even pay full price for the tickets because you just buy the last minute and get good discounts. So that was even better. So.
Never pay retail. Love that. Yeah.
So what job manages to get a talented man like you and burden you with that obligation of going to New York?
It's a hard life, hey? So I work in IT. So I'm an IT consultant in the financial services industry. So that's how I moved from London to New York and got from New York to here. So been with the same company for 10 years doing that.
So your level of IT is not so much on the knees, screwdriver in hand.
No,
your
I systems, don't get dirty.
Systems and international systems development.
Yeah, I'm sort of what they call professional services. So I consult on how to use the software and how to look at the business issues and understand, right, okay, this is how we can help solve your business issues. So that sort of thing. So I don't configure PCs and things like that.
Listeners, I think this man travels at the pointy end of the plane.
I did. Well, I did to New York and back, but when it was on my own dime to the UK and back, I did it in the back of the plane.
Jodie's been up the pointy end of the plane recently.
Yeah, only once, and it was a fabulous experience, and I shall remember it forever. A distant memory.
Yeah, but see, when you hit the side of the mountain, Jodie, you're the first ones to go.
But if you're going to die, you're going to die.
The good thing is you get to you do get the flatbed, which is that does make life a lot easier when you're going that long way from LA to Sydney sort of thing. So.
Well, having worked in New York before, this visit back to New York on the way to Wales for a small period of work, what's it like? Is it like going home? Familiar places, familiar spaces?
Yeah, it was. I haven't been back there for nearly 4 years. It was. I thought it was three, but when I got there, it was like, oh no, it's really four. So it's all very the same, but different as well sort of thing. So just being back there for that week was good to just, and the hotel I was staying in happened to be in Chelsea, which was handy. So just walking along the streets just brought back all those memories of the 2 years of living in New York, which was amazing. I loved it there. So it was good just to walk around and reminisce. And I actually lived in Hoboken, which is across the river in New Jersey, and even went over there Sunday afternoon just to have a walk around there. It's nice little parks. And of course, the weather was beautiful and sunny, so the nights were light. So it was like, oh, this is the time of year I really miss New York.
Because Hoboken's been one of those places that's been a bit of a sleeper. And friends of mine that go to New York, they're artists. They're in New York, you know, at least once a year. And they actually gave me this fabulous photo of a plaque. And it's you know, to honour the fact that Frank Sinatra was born in Hoboken.
That's
And there's this photo. And then the next photo was like this industrial landscape.
Yeah, it used to be the dirty docks sort of area of New York. That's where all the heavy industry was, but it's literally across the river. If compared to, say, Brooklyn, Hoboken's actually closer to Manhattan, if you think of the main thing. So I could be in the city in 20 minutes sort of thing. So it was a great place to be in. When I moved from London to New York, the office I actually worked in is out in New Jersey, so I could be in the middle of New Jersey close to work, or I could be closer to Manhattan and commute into New Jersey for work. So that's what I ended up doing. So, and Hoboken's a great town, vibrant, all sort of 20, 30, 40 people, 40-year-old people sort of thing, lots of corporate.
Yeah. Sort of puts the number 16 up St Kilda Road to shame.
I'm always interested to know, for you being a gay man and in a professional, travelling from one country to another, how did you connect with people and make new friends?
It's a hard thing to do. When I moved from Wales to London, I found that very hard to sort of break out and just build that social network. And I did struggle with it in New York, but when I moved to New York, I was like, right, you just have to put yourself out there. You have to get out of your comfort zone. So that was a bit of a challenge, but having the accent in New York definitely helps. Like, okay. you go into a bar and people hear your accent and they just want to chat to you. I mean, it's not necessarily pickup lines or anything like that. It's just people want to, oh, where are you from? You hear the accent. And so there was that. And then also I joined some social networking groups. So they had a social networking group that pretty much every day of the week has something going on. One day you could be going to a movie. Another day you could be going to a theater or going kayaking. And so there was always something to do. So I joined that and made friends through there. And then I also joined the gay volleyball teams there, Gotham Volleyball, which is a massive organisation. So that's how I got my fingers out into sort of starting to meet a few people. And then once you meet a few people, you get invited to a house party and you meet a few more. And within a few months, yeah, I was into the New York lifestyle, which was really good.
And then you chop that off, you come to Australia,
yeah,
and now you've returned for a week to New York. How do you connect back to your existing networks?
So Facebook is the way you keep in touch, obviously. So, well, these days mostly. So basically sent a few messages to friends, hey, I'm going to be in town. And it's a bit unfortunate, it was very last minute. This wasn't decided or wasn't confirmed until the Friday, and I was flying out on the Sunday. So it was pretty much a case of sending a few messages to friends and saying, right, I'm going to be around for a few days, hopefully we get to catch up. So and then it was, they actually had one of the volleyball tournaments was on the weekend I was there, so I went along to that and managed to catch up with some friends at the volleyball tournament and went to the bar afterwards and caught up with a few friends there. So yeah, that way.
And if you've just tuned in, this is Detours here on Joy 94.9, and we're talking with Mark, and the time now is 25 minutes past 12. And Mark, how do you plan your trips? I mean, obviously you use Facebook to keep in touch with friends, but mm-hmm. are you someone who buys travel guides and carries it around? Or
If I'm going to a new country or a new place, then I like to buy the travel guide more as a souvenir as much as anything else. One of my bookshelves at home, there's just a whole range of travel guides. It's like, and every now and again, you just glance at that and go, oh yeah, I remember when I went to Barcelona, or oh yeah, I remember when I went to Prague. And so I like to buy the book just as a souvenir as much as anything else. But going back to New York, it was pretty much just wing it sort of thing, really. I tend to buy the book, but do I read all of it? No, I'll flick through a few pages. And then on that day, when I arrive to a new city, I like to get lost. I just go for a walk and just get myself lost, and you eventually find your way back. And that's a good way to explore the city, I think.
Although I have heard that Venice is a very hard place to find your way back to your hotel. A number of people I know, they have those little laneways, and it's very difficult.
I remember doing that when I was in Prague, and I walked for about 5 or 6 hours in the end, and got my way back in the end. But you always get your bearings in the end, then, I think, if you do that.
Some of the bigger Asian cities like Shanghai or Beijing, I've been lost for 8 hours in Beijing as well.
Oh, no.
I wore out a complete set of shoes just getting back to the hotel.
I think it's fabulous. The only place where I sort of became lost was in Amsterdam. And I can remember we're walking along, and we had a map out, and somebody said, look, don't ever pull a map out, you know, because if there's anybody on the street that's going to attack you. And they see, I have no fear. And anyway, so we're lost. We're in the back blocks of Amsterdam somewhere. And my partner at the time pulled out a map, and I said, oh, Lordy, what are you doing? And it was amazing because these three punks from across the road saw that and came over to us. And I thought, I'm just going to say, look, we're lost. You know, can you help us? And it sort of threw them off a bit. But I think they had intentions.
Yeah.
Well, the girl was cute, so, you know.
Oh, those sort of intentions.
You know, who can say?
So travelling and love. When you travel, I'm remiss. I haven't asked you if you're in a relationship or not. If you are, don't tell us all the details of the trip to New York on the way to Wales. But being overseas, and when you've been single and overseas, what's that like for you in terms of forming attachments to people?
To be honest, it was hard when I was traveling. And it wasn't so much traveling, it was never knowing how long you're going to be in that particular place. So when I moved to London, it was pretty much an opportunity came up, and I didn't know how long I was going to be there. When I moved to New York, it was the same thing. So it was always a case of, you don't want to make yourself too attached, because who knows, in 6 months' time or in 3 months' time. So I've got to be honest, my serious dating, I did put on hold, because I just didn't want to sort of get in that position of, right, okay, I'm in love, and now I have to leave the country. And especially in America, where there aren't any immigration rights for same-sex relationships, it's very hard to be put in that position. So I did find that hard. But when I moved to Australia, I've made this place my home now, so I feel settled here. But even then, for the first few years, it was a case of I've just been extended every 6 months. I was on a temporary visa, so there was that. So it was only when I got my permanent residency that I felt that I could sort of let myself get into that place. And thankfully, I'm in that place now. So I am in a long-term relationship. I've been my partner nearly 2 years now. So yeah, that's good.
That's lovely.
Great.
It's a good story. Now, we often, with that, we take for granted, don't we, the rights we have as gay people here in Australia. We get those relationship rights. We can bring partners here. In the States, unless they get marriage, they don't have any of those fundamental rights.
Correct.
And that's why it's so important for them in America to have that little M word ahead of theirs. Would you get married, Mark?
I wouldn't. I don't think I need to. I do believe in the right to have the choice. So, especially in Australia, would I go through the whole ceremony? I think that's more that I'm just a private person, in that I wouldn't want to be up there in the sort of end of the spotlight sort of thing. But if it was to get the rights, like say in the US, then definitely I think it's something that should be there as an option.
Well, Mark Ristock's not so private. He's not going to share a lot more with us about his journeys on his way to Wales, but via New York. Uh-huh. You're on Detours with Jodie, Lindsay and Greg, and our guest Mark Ristock.
Check out our podcast on the Joy website, joy.org.au. This is Joy 94.9, your lesbian and gay station.
And you're listening to Detours here on Joy 94.9. That great track there was by Gossip, A Move in the Right Direction.
That was a fabulous track, Joy. I like that. Nice and boppy for a cold Saturday morning. And today we're talking with Mark, who is originally from Wales, worked in New York and found his way over to Australia. We're very glad that you did.
Thank you.
But one of the things that we had a quick chat about during the break, and it's something that really got me jealous a few years ago, is that the availability, when you're living in London, Wales, or in Europe, had the availability of just popping over somewhere for a weekend.
Yeah.
How many times did you do that?
Not as many as I would now if I went back, to be honest. It's one of those things that you think, oh, yeah, I'll do that. But lots of places. I mean, I've been all over Europe pretty much most, well, probably at least 15 times, I would have thought, different places all over Europe. So in those few years I was there. So it is a great opportunity to just go, oh, well, I've got a few days vacation to take. Where shall I go? And, oh, right, Prague looks all right, or Istanbul looks all right, or Italy, or wherever. And it's also just a 1 hour or 2 hour flight. That's the other great thing. It's not like, and that's one thing I notice here is being in Australia, you do feel that bit. You can't just pop to another country for or not the variety of countries anyway. So.
And it sort of opens up the world a little bit too. My friend who I became very jealous of was Italian, and on the weekends they'd, you know, fly to Switzerland or something for the weekend. Istanbul, tell us a little bit about that trip.
Oh, that was amazing. It was, again, very much a last-minute trip. It was I just had a bit of holiday that I had to take by the end of the year, otherwise I was going to lose it. So it's like, okay, take a few days off. Where can I go? And I live a lot of my life by just why not do something? And it popped up and didn't really know much about it. Bought the book and had a flick through it. And it's like, okay, let's go and go visit there. And had no expectations really about it at all. But what I loved about it is the mix of cultures, the East and the West, the fact that the city's half in Europe, half in Asia, and that you've got the Muslim and the Christian cultures there, and even within there, all the different sects. So you've got some people who are obviously very religious, through to people who are sort of have no religion. And in the main square, you've got one of the oldest Muslim mosques and one of the oldest Christian churches right facing each other. And not that I'm very religious myself, but just to see all of that history together and living together, when you see in the news sort of all the trouble that is caused, well, or attributed to some of that. To see that happening in harmony seemed was just an amazing culture. And the bazaars and the spices and the noise and
the smells.
It was beautiful. It was amazing. It was just overload.
Did you try an hamal?
What's hamal?
It's Turkey. It's a sauna where you have men on one side and women on the other side. And what was that like?
It was good. They treat you pretty rough when they're giving them out the sort of the rub down sort of thing, but it was really good. Yeah, it's good, interesting sort of culture to sort of just go along and see that as well. Yeah.
It is an interesting way to explore a culture by getting naked with people.
Yeah.
Because
you sound like you're talking from experience.
Why, hello.
No. I just mean when I went to San Francisco, I went to a Japanese bathhouse for the first time in my life, and they had a ladies' day and a men's day on separate days.
Right, yeah.
And you know, of course, I am quite shy, believe it or not, and I did find that quite confronting. But to be in in San Francisco, but in a Japanese bathhouse, and then sort of all these cultures infused.
I think once you do it, and if everyone's doing it, then you don't really. There's nothing to notice, really. And where I found that as interesting as I did the who's the photographer who does the nude shoots that it was in Sydney a couple of years ago. I can't think of his name.
What's his name? Seymour Cyril.
Anyway, but at the Opera House, we did it. I was one of the ones of 4,000 people who stood there, and 3 o'clock in the morning, we all stripped off, sort of thing, and did the photo. And that was the same sort of thing. It's quite liberating. You sort of think, oh, will I do this? And then you do it, and then everyone's going like, what's the fuss, really? So.
And when they go cut, like we've done our shoot, thank you very much. Yeah. Does anyone just sort of stand around and realise they're naked amongst thousands of people and look at them?
There was a little bit of that actually. Like you sort of okay, and then but there was a bit of a case. Okay, right. I'm feeling exposed now. Time to put it. And it's amazing how many people just put a jacket on. Like, you're still, all the bits are exposed, but having a jacket on sometime gave you that bit of sort of protection. Although it was a bit chilly as well, so that might have had something to
the
do with it.
The great leveller. Cold weather.
Now, Mark, we had an SMS from Diane from Northcote who said, you mentioned before about Prague, and she wants to know a bit more about that.
Okay. So, again, that was another quick trip to Prague, and it's like, oh, where should I go? And it was, and this is probably 15 years ago now, so it was still fairly Eastern European. It hadn't been sort of corrupted so much by the Western side of the culture at the time. So just going there was amazing. It was a week before Christmas, and again, this happened a lot. I had to take a week's holiday by the end of the year. Where am I going to go? So I took a trip there. It was a cheap one of those cheap flights, got there, and it was amazing. In the main town square, Wenceslas Square, they actually had sort of market stalls, and they were selling things like wooden toys and very things you see on traditional Christmas cards. It was exactly like that, and it wasn't there for the tourists. That they were buying little wooden toys for their kids for Christmas. And obviously, back home in London at the time, everyone's in the shopping malls with their iPods and all that sort of stuff. And so that, again, was quite an interesting thing to see that how different the lives are. And they also had a manger there with a real donkey and a real sheep and things like that. So it was...
A real baby?
I don't think they had a real baby. They had a doll in there, but it was pretty amazing place, yeah. And it was cold, but and it really felt like Christmas, though. It was... bit of snow on the ground and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, we can tell you from the Northern Hemisphere by saying it really felt like Christmas, because for me that doesn't sound like Christmas at all, but it sounds fabulous.
It's the one thing I still can't get used to over here is Christmas in the summer. Just it doesn't feel like Christmas.
Now, that voice is Mark Gristock. Mark, we're going to explore how you go from New York.
Okay.
The journeys to perhaps Wales and how one gets to Wales from New York. And stay with us, because there's much more to come in Detours with Jodie Lindsay and Greg and Mark Gristock, our guest.
It's the perfect mix of music, news and interviews. Joy 94.9.
Thank you. I'll take another walk today. On the Charles Bridge I'll find my way. With the castle in the distance of my eye.
You're on Detours with Jodie Lindsay and Greg and our guest Mark Ristock. And we're exploring the journey, about to explore the journey from New York and how one gets to Wales via, perhaps via London. But joining us in the studio is someone that also, perhaps he's cooked Welsh rabbit before, I don't know.
It's Welsh Pete rabbit's Dillon. Not actually Welsh, is it?
What is it, Pete?
I don't know. It's a bit of minced bacon and
cheese on toast.
It's cheese on toast.
fancy cheese on toast.
My favourite thing out of Wales, of course, is the leek, which is the national flower or national
emblem.
Emblem of
the flower
Wales.
Is the daffodil.
Okay, well, anywho, love the leek. We're talking a lot today about charity and food. We've got two chefs in who are taking part in the Starlight Chefs Charity Cup. It's a big soccer match between chefs from, you know, some very well-known restaurants. That's happening as part of the Good Food and Wine Show next weekend. And then I found two women who nobody knows who are running food-based charity events in the next couple of weeks in Melbourne, so I thought we'd get them in to talk as well. So it's all about charity. We're opening our benevolent hearts.
That's Pete Dillon, Cravings, nice. After Matt on the News, coming up at 1 o'clock.
And that fantastic track before was Janet Robin, and that was Everyone Falls in Love in Prague. Here on Joy 94.9.
Great music, Joe.
Yeah,
it's
maybe
grateful.
That's where we're going wrong. We need to go to Prague and fall in love. Yeah.
There's a great Aussie band called Bachelors from Prague. Do you remember them?
No.
Fantastic jazz band sound. I'm not sure they ever came from Prague, but it was just really good talking point. Now, Mark Ristock, to get from one part of the globe, New York, and traverse across to the UK and make your way to Wales, how does one plan it and put it into practice?
You just go online and type in a few things and it all magically happens. But no, a bit more to it than that. So, you basically fly from New York to London and then it's a bus trip from London back to Wales. So, well, you've got a couple of options. You can either go into the Paddington and get the train direct to Cardiff, or what's easier is that getting the bus direct from Heathrow, so you don't have to trek into the city with your bags and all of that sort of stuff. So... it's not too bad. It takes about 3.5 hours on the bus from London to Cardiff.
And New York Heathrow flight time?
It's about 7 hours. Yeah, so...
So it's the same as Melbourne KL, literally. It's a similar sort of leg flight. You get enough time for a reasonably good movie, something to eat, and you're coming down and you're in London.
Yeah, when I first started living... When I was working in London, and I went back and forth to New York for work a few times... It used to feel like 7 hours was a long time, but once you do it a few times, it's no time at all, really. Like you said, you watch a movie, read a bit of a book or a magazine, and suddenly you're arriving and have something to eat and stuff, so yeah.
And what's it like touching base on UK soil and making your way home?
It was quite good to sort of land, and you're like, oh, because I haven't been back to the UK for 4.5 years as well, so it was... It's interesting, touching down in Wales, in London was one thing, but then as you're coming home, as you cross from Wales, from England into Wales, the signposts start to turn into Welsh. So that's when I always get that feeling of I'm home, when you see the sign as you're crossing and it says Croeso I Cymru, which is Welcome to Wales in Welsh, and you always see that as you cross over. So once you cross the bridge... You're like, oh, right, I'm home now. So that's always a really nice sign as you cross the bridge. You see that and you feel like, yeah, I'm home.
I was just listening to that, you know, and remembering Little Britain. And the sign.
Davin.
Yeah, Davin. And the sign, what was the name of the town in
Wales? Llandewi Brefi.
That's it. And apparently people kept stealing that sign.
Yeah,
because of the show.
Yeah.
So please tell us you have a friend called Mfanwe.
I don't know. But
bugger.
I'm sure I've worked with someone called that. But yeah, it is. I mean, I love watching Little Britain and Gavin and Stacey is another amazing comedy show. Because just the accent, I do feel homesick here sometimes. I mean, do I miss living in Wales? Maybe not, but the family definitely. Call my family back home. So just hearing the accent on TV every now and again for one of those shows, I mean, I could watch it over and over again just for that.
So this trip to Wales, did you announce that you were coming to your family, or was one of those, oh, Mark's coming down the driveway?
I have done that before, but no, this time I did announce it because my
parents have been a bit sort of homesick of me as well, sort of thing. They've been suffering a little bit, me not being back for so long. So I sort of had to give them a bit of an announcement and give them a chance to tidy up the house and stuff like that. Get the bedroom ready and, yeah.
So it sounds like you do quite a lot, you used to do quite a lot of work, travel for your work.
Yep.
No, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But work now, for your travel.
Work for your travel. So what about now, though? I mean, the trip to New York... And then do you have any other trips planned?
Not so much at the moment, no. It's basically when I was in the US, I had lots of different clients all over the country. And when I was in London, the same thing all over London and all the UK and Europe. But here, my client is just based in Melbourne, so I don't get to travel too much. But we're hoping to get a few more clients around the in Asia especially, so it'd be good to get a few travel plans out of that. It happens occasionally. So
that would be good.
Yeah, I was in Singapore a couple of months ago, so that wasn't too bad. But yeah, so but I do miss that element of traveling. Sometimes it gets a bit of when I was in New York, it was a bit right, okay, I'm over it now, I've seen every hotel, I've seen every airport. And sometimes it is, you're just going for a day or two, so you don't see any of the city. It is a case of, okay, hotel, office, hotel, airport, and that's it, sort of thing. But
so if we're to come to visit Wales, what mm-hmm. should we do? What's something that would be connecting us to your passions about mm-hmm. your home country?
I think it starts looking at Cardiff, the capital city where I'm from. The main thing is the Cardiff Bay now, which used to be, when I was growing up, was a derelict Docklands area, which the police wouldn't go to, never mind anyone else. But over the last 20 years, they've spent like £1 billion building that up through European funding. And now that's an amazing waterfront with cafes and theatre district there. And there's the Millennium Centre, which is like it was called an opera house, but then that didn't go down well because it sounded too elitist. So then it became sort of just a sort of an entertainment centre. And there's just lots to do around there. And if anyone's a sci-fi geek and into Doctor Who and Torchwood, then you'll recognise all of that area around there. So that's just a beautiful place to go for a stroll and have some dinner and stuff like that. In the city centre itself, you've got Cardiff Castle, which is right in the centre of the city, and beautiful old castle that's been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. So that's beautiful to see as well.
It sounds wonderful. I never went to Wales, and it was one of those things that it is on my bucket list, because one of the things about Ireland and Wales is that I've heard that they are so incredibly green, like it's green that you'll never ever see anywhere else.
Yeah. If you get out of the city, and I mean, that's the great thing about where Cardiff is that in 20 minutes one direction you're at the beach, 20 minutes another direction you're up in the hills, and it is beautiful up there. And the Brecon Beacons especially, where when I was a kid in the Scouts, we were up there all the time, and it is amazing. It's green, and, well, it's called the Green and Pleasant Land sort of thing because of that. But to keep that green, it is because it rains a lot.
Rains all the time.
It doesn't.
But, now, what's something to avoid going to Wales? What would you not do if you were
not
us?
Forget an umbrella.
Yeah, forget an umbrella. Don't tell you support England rugby. No, I don't think there's anything I wouldn't do. I think the people are pretty much very friendly, so I'm just going to a local pub and just get chatting to the locals, I think, is the best thing to do. I mean, just get in there and do that and just be, I mean, like I said, they're pretty friendly, and because of the common sort of ancestry, there's always something to chat about, especially with the rugby and the cricket, not so much. I don't do the cricket, but the rugby, yeah, definitely.
Is it beer or stout?
Beer.
Beer. Cold or warm?
Well, warmish.
Warmish. And is it thick like England beer, or is it sort of beer?
There's various. I mean, traditional beer would be like Brains is the main brewery there that's been going for years and years and years, and that's just proper beer. But these days it tends to be more of a light lager sort of thing that's served in most pubs. But yeah, get into a good local pub. And I mean, when I used to work in a pub, and you're pulling the handle to get the pint sort of thing going and build the head on it.
Wasn't Dylan Thomas from Wales?
Yeah.
Because when you were saying that, I just had images of Under Milkwood, you know, in the movie. It's a bit weird sort of. It's sort of like that. Wales sort of has that eeriness nervous about it almost. And I think it's because of things like Dylan Thomas and Under Milk Wood and,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've had a message from Matt from Paran wants to know, are you able to get away from the Aussie traveller? If you go to London, there's Aussies everywhere. Can you get away from the Aussie traveller in Wales?
No.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
There's an Outback and the pub and there's, what's the other one? There's the South Africans is the other one. And I think it's because of the rugby culture as well, is that so, but it's not, I don't think it's seen as a negative thing. It's like, yeah, one of the pubs we used to always go to was there was a pub there where it's one of those fake Australian pubs sort of thing, but a lot of the backpackers went there and they sell cheap beer, so why not? So that's, go and watch the sport there.
Can I ask, how is it identified as an Aussie pub? Like, is there a stuffed kangaroo out the front?
It's all that. It's like flags and kangaroos and boomerangs and
a Foster's logo.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and that's there's lots of that.
And a bikini babe.
Yeah, every stereotype you can think of is in there somewhere, sort of thing. Yeah.
So Mark Ristock, where next? You know, you've got an amazing experience of travel, both for work and private. Where next? What's on the agenda?
Oh, do you know what? I was meant to be going for a holiday. It's my 40th birthday a couple of months back, and I was meant to be going to Hawaii for that, but the airline went bust, so that didn't happen.
Oh, that's
so
sure.
So that's one of my bucket list places to go, is always to go and see Hawaii, or Japan be the next thing as well. I'd like to get to Tokyo. I haven't been to Japan yet. I've been to a few places in Asia, but I haven't made it there yet.
Oh, great. What a bucket list.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Mark. And when you do those other trips, if you'd like to come back and share the journeys, we'd love to hear from
you. Sure.
Be great. And in fact, we also love to hear from you as well. So you can always email us at detours@joy.org.au or sign up to our Facebook page and make suggestions. We've got actually somebody recently asked that they wanted some advice on how to travel and pack, and so that they had the right outfits. So we're going to have a personal stylist come in who can have apparently 15 different outfits in one cabin. You know,
I need that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's in a couple of weeks' time. Imogen will be joining us here on Joy.
Fantastic.
Fabulous. And everybody, don't forget Bench TV tonight. It's our second last episode for this season, and we're grilling the pollies. Not necessarily the pole dancers, but the politicians. So 10:30, C44 or C31 if you're still analogue.
Awesome.
Bench TV.
And today's show with Mark Ristock as our guest will be on podcast later today. Check out joy.org.au/podcasts.
And coming up very shortly, we'll be Pete with Cravings, and we'll have the news coming up at 1 o'clock. And stay tuned. Of course, Eurovision Song Contest is on tonight. There's heaps of great things on Joy. And have a great weekend.
Happy trails.
Thank you.
Get more of the fresh new sounds from around the world.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.